Hello, I'm Alan Kohler, Editor-in-Chief of Eureka Report.
Oh, hello, I'm Scott Pape, the Barefoot Investor, and I'm thrilled to be here.
And we are the Money Cafe.
We are the Money Cafe. Well, we need to talk about this, Alan, because you are the Money Cafe, but we're here at ABC. I've arrived to do this interview, and they've said, James Kirby really wants to meet up with you to be on his podcast. And I said, what's the podcast? And they said, the Money Cafe. And I said, but I'm here to do the Money Cafe. And it's only as a listener. You guys have both got the Money Cafes. It's like my parents are getting divorced. You know, you both still love us, but you've gone your separate ways. Is that how it's working out?
Yes.
And so I'm going on your Money Cafe.
And I must say,
and James's Money Cafe.
James and I still love each other.
You love each other very much. Which one of you is going to be the Disneyland dad, though, for the guests? Because you're going to be pouncing on all the guests. You know, you're competing now a little bit.
Well, and the confusing thing is that it's going to be both called the Money Cafe.
It's very confusing.
There are two Money Cafes.
And you've got a very big following. You know that. My cousin nearly broke his neck, and he said the one thing that got him through staring up at the ceiling was you two. And now you've gone your separate ways. You're consciously uncoupling.
Look, all I can say, Scott, is that it's now two for the price of one. So, you know, it's double the pleasure. It's double the pleasure.
Nice.
And I'm just delighted to have you with me.
Well, I'm delighted to be here,
Scott. And as you know, I've been an avid follower of yours for a very long time. And I think we need to talk about a few things, including, in particular, now that we've stopped talking about Cafe.
Your conscious uncoupling.
And our divorce.
Yes.
What you're doing now, which is money movement.
Yes. So this is something that I've been...
So you've become a teacher.
Well, yeah. I mean, so what basically, after I wrote The Barefoot Investor that sold a couple of million copies, the number one question people would ask me is, why didn't I learn this at school? So why am I learning this in my 30s, 40s, 50s? Why didn't I learn this in school? So basically, I set out to try and answer that question. For the last couple of years, I've been in primary schools, high schools, private schools, public schools, trying to work out why don't we teach kids the one subject that they will be tested on every day of their lives, and whether they get a passing or a failing grade, you know, really colours their entire life. Why don't we teach this? And so what I've done is I've gone in and created my own programs for both primary school and secondary school, and just tried to work out, well, how do I actually make this fun?
So you're getting put on the curriculum?
No. It's very hard to try and crack that.
Have any schools actually embraced what you're doing?
So I did a pilot program, and I think one in five schools applied for the pilot program, which was great, but you know, it's the states that control
one in five schools
across
Australia.
The nation. Yeah,
well, that's a lot.
Yeah, yeah. So it was really good. So basically, I was piloting these programs, failing badly, but learning how to engage kids. So with the primary school kids, we got them. The key is to get them up and doing stuff rather than talking at them. Theory doesn't cut it. So I was getting them to, they were doing little bake sales. They were doing these things called a toy frenzy where they bring in their toys and they sell them to each other. They get the money. So that's the first thing, working, as in if I get out of bed and I work, I get paid. And you would be amazed at the 35-year-olds I meet who haven't had that link between work and getting paid. Then what we did is have
that's
class.
Tragic.
Well, if you read my column each week, there's people always, you know, it hasn't dawned on them. You know, money just comes from somewhere.
So if you go and do some work, someone will give you
someone
money.
Someone will pay me. Sounds really basic. But, you know, we're talking 5-6-year-olds here. So then what we did was getting them to spend some money because no one likes a tightwad, you know, getting them to save up for a class goal and getting them to give. So I trialled this program in Hervey Bay, which is one of the poorer places in Australia. And these
near Bundaberg.
Yeah, these 6- and 7-year-olds basically came up with the idea that they wanted to feed 35 homeless people in their area. And the reason they came up with that is that if they didn't have – when they don't have breakfast, they get hangry. And they said that that's really important and we should feed people that can't afford breakfast. Now, I didn't come up with the idea. The teachers didn't come up with the idea. These are 5, 6, 7-year-old kids that came up with this idea. So it was really great because, you know, really when it all boils down to it, what we want from kids or what I want from my four kids is I want them to be hardworking and I want them to be kind. And what this little program does in primary school is teach kids those basic lessons. And then with the high school, I was, you know, really targeting kids that are 14, 15, 16 years old, very teenagery at that level, throwing me a lot of shade. And my idea was to get them a part-time job. So they had to sell themselves, which is like the first thing. You actually have to think of good things about yourself and sell yourself. Then once you get your pay packet, like you get the job, you're never more interested in money than you are in that first week, right, before you get paid. So I got them to set up their little buckets and had them save for something. So it could be, I don't know, I was saying like, I don't care what it is. It could be a bike. It could be a tattoo. It could be schoolies. I don't care. But I want them to actually achieve something so that hopefully they leave school thinking I am good with money, and then that compounds.
And one of the things you're saying here is kick the banks out of schools. What's that about?
Well, I mean, so for
where many, are they going to save?
For many years, what happened was the schools, and even to today, it's not so much that I don't like Combank's Dolomites, which is the main education bank in schools. It's just that I think that by saying, the banks will teach that, we don't need to teach that, I think it's a cop-out. I think really teaching these life skills is fundamental to raising financially competent, capable young people. And by saying that we're just going to palm that out to the banks who have a vested interest in signing up kids who are also – they've got, you know, Klarna, they've got Snoop Dogg doing buy now, pay later. They've got credit cards, they've got car loans. I just think that there's a vested interest there. And I think that if my analogy is, it's kind of like having Ronald McDonald come into schools and teach kids about food nutrition. If we're spending all this money on education.
Yeah, that is a big call.
But it's true.
Commonwealth Bank is McDonald's.
No, Ronald McDonald, of course. Combank, and, you know, like I don't have any ill will towards Combank. But what I'm saying is they are signing up kids. That's what they're doing. It's a marketing database. And so what I'm saying is that we should have our educators should say, this is really important. It's a life skill that every kid's going to be tested on. We're going to make this part of what we do. And so that's what the money movement's about. If you go to change.org/money-movement. I've got nearly 100,000 signatures for people who agree with me. I'm not getting paid for this. I'm not trying to make a buck out of it. I'm donating my time because I'm really passionate about it.
I can tell. And good for you.
Thank you. I don't know if I'm going to get anywhere because, again, the states are all trying to, you know, pass the buck
and stuff.
It's
a bit like, if I may, it's a bit like Jamie Oliver trying to improve the nutrition of English school kids. I don't know. You remember that campaign?
I was at a book signing.
You look a bit like him.
I was at a book signing and this old bird was like, I like your chicken cacciatore. I'm like, that's not me. That's not me. Although Jamie has got in trouble with his restaurants and I can't cook. So maybe the two of us could actually.
He might need some help with money.
Yeah, and I need some help with cooking. So it's a dream.
It's a marriage made in heaven. Yes. Speaking of marriages. So are you still keeping in touch with the markets, watching what's going on?
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, I think, you know, from the conversations that we've had, what you would remember is that I now kind of don't have my financial services license. I gave that up and I'm now a financial counsellor. So basically what that involves is if you ring up the 1-800-007-007 number, which is the National Debt Helpline, you'll get put through to someone like me. I work for free and I help really vulnerable Australians manage their money and help them get out of tight spots that they're in. So I'll
How much often do you do that?
I'm doing it part-time. Right now my money movement stuff is taking up a lot of my time, but generally I'll do it a couple of days a week. And I'm basically helping single parents, I'm helping domestic or family violence situations, helping women escape those, helping people with terminal illnesses and people who have got themselves in all sorts of bothers with the banks and borrowed too much, and try to create an outcome that everyone kind of can live with.
Speaking of Commonwealth Bank, as we were,
yes,
they put out a note today, or the economics department put out a note today predicting that the first rate hike in Australia will be in November 2022, next year.
Right.
From 0.1% to 0.25%.
Right.
And then it would go on from there to 1.25% the following 12 months. So given what you're learning in the, on the debt helpline,
yes,
what do you think an increase in interest rates will do, to, given the amount of debt out there and the amount of money that people have borrowed?
Yeah, I mean, I think that these are very small numbers. The interest rates are so low right now, but there's a small percentage of people that have borrowed that are in way too deep. And it really, for me, we've got some of the highest household debts in the world here in Australia, and it just blows my mind that people can freak out about one interest rate rise. But here we are. So I think there's going to be a lot of people who are going to be at the margin, who are going to be quite stressed. And I worry about those people. Maybe they haven't been taught. Maybe they need to be taught stuff in schools, Alan, so that they don't make these mistakes.
For a lot of those people who are deep in debt, it's probably a bit too late for that.
And I also think that for a lot of young people, they are, they leave school. We know the statistics say that they are some of the most financially illiterate of all Australians, and they get signed up. They are marketed to like you would never believe, because they know they've got 40 years to pay it off.
Yeah, that's right. But anyway, most people don't pay off their loans.
No.
Their housing loans, do they? I mean, they turn them over every 4 years or so.
Something like
on average.
Yes.
So.
But, I have been wrong. I have believed that, interest rates will go up and people will get in trouble. But so far, they've just kept on going down.
They have. But they're not going to go any lower.
Well, you don't think we'll get negative? Well, I mean, we've basically, if you've got money in a savings account now, it's negative, really, isn't it?
Well, in real terms, after inflation. I mean, inflation's not very high, but sure, you're going backwards in real terms. That's true.
It is tough.
So, yes, there's no point having money in the bank anymore.
Mm. Dogecoin. You would be into crypto, wouldn't you?
Well,
you love a punt.
Maybe
what are you in? What's your favourite crypto?
So what I'm doing in Eureka Report is writing about a different crypto every week.
Yes.
Last week it was Ethereum. The week before that it was Solana. Before that it was Uniswap, and so on.
What have you been investing in?
I have not invested in any cryptocurrencies.
Nothing.
No.
That's not unlike you. You haven't got into. Haven't even had a little flutter on any of it.
No. I don't understand it enough. Do you invest in cryptocurrencies?
No, I do not. I get thousands of questions coming in all the time, which is a blessing and a curse. And as Bitcoin was up to 50, 60,000, it was commensurate with the amount of requests I was getting or questions I was getting about it. And Dogecoin, as Elon was pumping that one. But no, I don't because, like you, I kind of don't understand it enough. I think what is really interesting is that there will, obviously this is something that will be the future. I just don't know whether it's Bitcoin or something else. But I do think it's really interesting.
It is very interesting.
I think Dogecoin is, anyone who invests in that is stupid.
Or Dogecoin, yeah. Well, I mean,
even the founder thinks it's stupid.
So one of the things I've been trying to investigate with all these cryptocurrencies: what do you actually get when you buy one? What is it? What sort of asset is it? No, but what is it? I mean, what do you actually?
It's a new asset class that we've actually if you think more broadly, what we have seen or witnessed over the last few years is the creation of another asset class. Now, I don't know what backs that up. But I think we're in the process of finding out. And I think that the stable coins like Tether are really interesting. And I think that there could be a lot of volatility around that.
The other thing that's very interesting in my view is the ones called DeFi, or you're in the DeFi business, decentralized finance, where they're kind of automatic fintech or automatic banks in a way that the blockchain software actually enables lending and borrowing or exchanges, transactions and so on, without any intermediaries.
Highly volatile. Mark Cuban, who's the billionaire who owns the Dallas Mavericks, wrote a really long, quite interesting blog post. The next day he did all his dough. So it's a very interesting area.
Day he did all his dough.
He did all his dough. You can Google that, and you can read about.
It's probably a fair bit of dough to do.
He's, well, not all his dough, just the money that he'd invested.
Oh, I see. Yes, right. So, but what? So, where do you have a view about the future of Bitcoin, for example?
No, I have none. I have the idea of where this will go. I didn't think it would get to 60,000 or whatever it was. I didn't predict that it would then halve. I think it's fascinating. I think we're living through history, but I'm not willing to publicly say anything other than I think Dogecoin is silly. I think the rest, I'm just happy to watch from the grandstands.
Hmm.
Hey, which doesn't make me very popular because most of my audience are younger, and it feels like I'm at like a MLM, like a multi-level marketing conference, because I get people writing pages and pages trying to convince me that I am doing the wrong thing by not telling people to invest in crypto.
Really?
They have, yeah, it's like a religion. Like, I don't have Scott Pape index investor in my byline, but they do, you know, in the laser eyes and stuff. It's like a cult, kind of, to some people.
I agree. Mm. I think that's true.
Mm. It's fascinating.
Yeah. Announcement today was that Washington H. Sol Pattinson is going to merge or take over Milton Corporation. What do you think of that?
Well, yeah, now you're talking my talk, right? I'm picking up what you're putting down because that I love the old licks that are boring. They're kind of like index funds. They charge. They've been around for decades. You know, they're just the divs.
And by lick, we mean listed investment companies.
Listed investment companies like AFIC, Argo, Milton, boring as. Like no one has ever got, you know, in their Twitter profile, I'm a Milton or an old school listed investment company investor. I was perplexed at this. I mean, you're smarter than me, so maybe you'll have an inside running on it, but why you would
I am definitely not smarter than you, Scott.
Why you would pay a 10% premium for what is effectively an index fund, I do not know. I don't understand it. I think it's good because my father's got a heap of shares and I'm hoping, you know, he's got them in his super fund so he'll be able to sell them, but I don't know. I don't understand why they would do that.
Oh, isn't it because they want to be big? They want to be bigger by $4 billion.
Sure, but
If you're bigger, you get paid more.
Yeah, maybe.
Wouldn't you say?
Maybe. I mean, the thing that I like about the old licks is generally speaking, they're charging 10, 12 basis points. It's, you know, basically cheaper than a lot of the index funds. And they are slow and steady as they go. And they, for years, have put the shareholders first.
And they do make the occasional decision, don't they?
Well, I mean, occasionally, but, you know, you're not going into one of those old licks because you want to massively swing from the rafters you know, these are effectively index funds by another name, and that's okay. You know, that's okay. If you get your fully franked dividends and you're happy with that, great. But this one has got me puzzled. I'm not sure. I'm not as cynical as you, Alan. I think that there may be some merit to it, but I'll just have to do some more research.
Oh, that's not cynicism. That's just simply 30 or 40 years of experience talking.
Yes, there you go.
Talking.
Well, there you go.
Well, you mentioned that you get tons of questions. We've actually got a few here, not
Love
many,
it.
But a few here. Let's go through them, shall we?
Yes.
Julian says, a quick query regarding the end of financial year. To get the best bang for your buck, is there considered to be a better time to buy shares, i.e. the last week in June or the first week in July?
It's a coin toss. I'm going to give that one over to you. What do you think?
Oh, no.
I would suggest if you're a small business owner, you would probably say bugger the shares and buy something that you can write off for your business.
Sure. Yeah, well, that exactly, if you're a small business owner. But in terms of, I mean, it has to do with obviously tax year. June 30 is the end of the tax year. If you buy in June, then, you know, if you own them for more than a year, You pay less capital gains tax on them.
Yeah, but that's on the date that
but
you buy.
But really, that's from the date you buy them. So it really makes no difference.
No.
No. There we are. Simon says, if you could choose any three stocks on the ASX to get the highest return over the next 3 years, what would they be? Oh, Simon.
I think that I don't know. I'm not smart enough to know the answer to that one. So given that I don't know the answer to that, I would stick with low-cost index funds and low-cost listed investment companies, I think, and go steady as she goes.
But are you an index fund investor?
I love index funds.
Right.
Because it's, you know, if you look back, it's evidence-based investing that you can have all these things, you can swing from the rafters, but ultimately passively investing low cost into shares and finding something else to do with your time. I like farming and letting the market do its thing, letting capitalism do its thing, I think is the way to go. What about you? You didn't give your three tips. You need to. This is what people
I don't give tips. As soon as I tip a company, they go down immediately.
What do you think, though? I mean, I've got to be the listener's friend here because...
So this is not a tip, but I'll tell you about a company that I interviewed this week.
Right.
And I interviewed Jeff Bainbridge, the CEO of Lark Distilling Company. Now, this is a very interesting little whiskey.
Is it whiskey?
Yeah, whiskey.
I used to write about this, a company called Nett. Absolute bunch of rogues. They've gone bankrupt now.
And
These barrels that they were selling out to investors...
Yeah, yeah.
And there wasn't enough whiskey.
This is entirely different. This is just different, right?
Okay, sure.
This is actual. They make whiskey. They've got their
Nat
brand.
Nat was like they voted the best whiskey in the world. But anyway, keep going. I'm sure it's a great
story.
Well,
it is beautiful whiskey.
Yes. Have you had some?
Yeah, I've always got some.
Did they give you some for the interview or not?
Absolutely not.
Excellent. Okay.
But I've always got some Lark in my room there, and anyway, it's good. But the
just
thing about
get you through the morning.
The thing about Lark, and this is what Jeff. That's right. Well, if you don't have a decent breakfast, you get hangry.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. And what is their market cap? How big are they?
Oh, I can't remember.
Small.
A couple hundred million, I think.
Oh, okay. Right.
No, they're not tiny.
Sure.
They make a fair bit. They've increased the amount of whiskey in their barrels by double. They're going to double it again next year. But what I found interesting about the business is that this is the CEO talking. I haven't independently researched this, but he says that there are five distilling businesses in the world: Pernod Ricard, Diageo, and three others. Mm-hmm. And what they do is that when smaller whiskey companies or distilling companies get large enough, they buy them.
Right.
And that's what they do. They don't actually start from scratch anywhere. They buy other companies, but they have, in order to be ripe to be taken over, they have to be a certain size. So this company's aim is to become that size. So basically they're a chook being plumped up to be taken over by one of the big distillers of the world.
Okay. Well,
and it's kind of interesting because their idea is to set up an auction to make sure that they get an auction going between two or three of them, so that they get the maximum price. Now, the Jeff Bainbridge and the other directors own a fair bit of the company.
Mm-hmm.
They'll all get rich if they pull this off.
I mean, the other one that I would say is that I have been looking at Afterpay. Now, I don't own shares in Afterpay, but as a financial counsellor and just in what I do, I have never seen a company with such brand loyalty as Afterpay. It is amazing. I have clients, financial counselling clients, that won't pay their rent in order to keep their Afterpay going. Afterpay are coming out with a new app. They are looking to create a banking app. I'm going to have a look at it, hopefully in the next month or two, and it will be released, I think, later on in the year. I think that's all publicly available information, but I'm going to get to have a look at it. And I think that's really interesting what they're doing because I'm yet to encounter a financial services brand that has captured so much loyalty. Now, I don't really use Afterpay. I don't invest in Afterpay, but just from the anecdotal feedback that I have from customers and clients and readers, they're doing something. There's something about that company that I think is really interesting. I don't know about the valuation, but I think it's interesting.
What about when you're on the debt helpline? Do many of those people who ring in...
No, they're the people.
Are they in trouble with buy now, pay later, or are they...
No, I mean, what? I think part of what they do is that they hold their Afterpay so... It's weird. It's like it's so precious to them that they won't pay their rent or they will not pay other debts in order to pay their Afterpay. And that's, I guess, what I'm saying is so interesting to me, that this company has this pull on so many people that they feel like it's the one debt they or the one service that they hold dear. And I've not seen any other buy now, pay later.
I didn't even know that. I didn't know.
It's fascinating that you know, I have clients again that won't pay their rent in order to keep their payments going for their Afterpay. It's very strange.
Wow.
Mm.
Final questions from Ryan. A question is for your thoughts on online wagering and associated technology, BetMakers being one and the upcoming BlueBet IPO another, PointsBet being another with some form.
I don't know what the question is, but I hate online betting.
I hate betting too.
So with the 1-800 debt line, you get clients come in, and what I find now is that young men gambling on their phones, it's sort of worse than the pokies were for their parents' generation, because they are always targeting them. They try and get them back with free spins or free money to get them gambling again. Your phone follows you around everywhere, and I just think it's a really insidious way to make a buck, and I just wouldn't want to have anything to do with it.
So, Ryan, you're asking the wrong
two
blokes about this, because neither of us has any time for these online gambling companies whatsoever. I would never invest in them.
Do you know Barstool Sports? Have you looked at Barstool Sports, Dave Portnoy?
No.
You don't Stool Presidente?
Nope.
Okay, so other people will know who this is. He's like the basically the day trader. He does Davey Global TV or Davey Day Trader Global TV. And he is really the voice. He called Warren Buffett a bum. And he's like the king. He's got millions of followers. And Barstool Sports has driven the meme stock rally that we've seen since last March. And Barstool Sports is really getting into online gambling because America have just allowed sports betting. So it's a huge wave, and I think what we're seeing is Australian entrepreneurs sort of jumping on that. But, you know, from what I've seen, again, I talked about Afterpay having some sort of hold on consumers. I have seen sports betting have a hold on generally young men, which I find really dangerous.
Me too. Well, Scott, it's been such a pleasure having you on the Money Cafe, this Money Cafe.
It's been great to come on to Alan Kohler's Money Cafe, and I'm really looking forward to going on. I kind of feel like I have to go to James Kirby's Money Cafe as well.
Yes.
It's kind of like shared access.
Yeah, we're sharing custody.
Great. So yeah, I'll be on that. But look, it's a thrill to be on. Honestly, you have been a mentor of mine for many years, and I really appreciate it.
That's it for Money Cafe this week. Thanks for listening. And if you've got a question, send it in and we'll answer it next week. Email the question to themoneycafe@eurekareport.com.au. Until next week, I'm Alan Kohler, Editor-in-Chief of Eureka Report, probably after next week as well. And I've been talking to Scott Pape, the Barefoot Investor.